Hi, my name is Roy Carlin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, The Crypto Podcast, on the road, all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, The Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast, so if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Colin, and I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach, and you see the QR code there, and it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show. Welcome to the Crypto Podcast. You can find all our episodes on thecryptopodcast.org. My guest today from Utah in the USA. He's the founder of Satori, a crypto AI, which is like a future oracle to help humanity anticipate upcoming challenges, which we could do with that today. You were previously, well, you're doing as well, lead developer of blockchain startup Moontree. Please welcome Jordan Miller.
That's right. Hi, thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this because one, AI is a big thing. So I suppose, I mean, I've just kind of touched on it. I know you worked with WCF Insurance as well, but maybe if you want to kind of introduce yourself further to the listeners.
Sure, yeah. So I started my programming career at WCF Insurance. And I started in the business intelligence team. I was kind of the applications developer, which would tie everything together. You know, all the data scientists that are making models, I'd deploy them and get them so they could be seen, that kind of stuff. So stitching all these different things together, that's kind of what I've been doing in my programming career. And then I was approached by Moontree to become their lead developer. And, you know, I wasn't planning on leaving my career there at WCF, but when I saw that it's in crypto, I've always wanted to work in crypto, and that would give me the ability to do some interesting stuff, I decided to go for it. And that did give me the understanding I needed to kind of stitch together this project that I had been thinking about for many years, an AI network, that a distributed network of AIs that are all talking about the future. Something that is open and distributed so that we can listen in on their conversation and kind of get a glimpse of what they think the future is going to be. So I've been able to start building that on my own, and we're getting ready to launch this summer. So we're getting pretty close.
I mean, when you say listening, it's kind of like what Google and Facebook are doing to us at the moment without our, you know, permission. They just kind of do these things. I mean, but true. If we kind of look, you know, when something is free, nothing's free. You don't get a free dinner.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so this, I mean, to speak to that, the data that this Satori network would be consuming is all public data. It would be whatever is publicly available, and it would mostly be looking at very broad metrics, like as far as the economy is concerned, something like the inflation rate or the jobs numbers, these very government statistic kind of demographic information.
So I want to touch on that. So, because everything is doctored to make it look a million times better. And when you actually understand what's going on, they don't include mortgages. They don't do this. They manipulate the whole market. And everybody thinks they're going, oh, inflation is 3%. And everybody's on their knees, barely able to survive. They're deciding, do I stay warm or do I put food in my belly?
Right.
How do we stop all that lies? Because they're manipulating everything. And to have the truth will help everybody.
That is a great question. So, well, it's an AI project that uses crypto, right? Not just to make a network, but also to give the creators of the AI, which is anybody who runs the program, the ability to control the AI. So you get the token. That token allows you to vote on which data streams have the most important data to predict. So if there's a data stream that reflects the true inflation rate, that's the one that it will focus on.
Okay, so with the bots that every country's been claiming the others doing, you know, the Americans claiming the Russians are doing it, the Russians are claiming them, and everyone else around the world are the same. How do we prevent the bad boys just having control over this so that they actually push the lie further?
Oh, right. Like, how do we make sure they don't control Satori itself?
Yeah.
So I feel like the solution to that, and also the solution to the problem of alignment, the alignment problem people have been talking about in AI for a long time, I think the real solution there is decentralization. Decentralize the control, try to get it out to as many people as possible so that we can have, you know, a good smattering, a good kind of across the board representation of what the real people want, you know, what they really think. So the decentralization is really, I think, our only solution to that problem.
So, I mean, one of my other podcasts is called The Awakening. I'm exposing fraud and corruption and solutions. And a lot of the stuff that I said 3 years later, they go, oh, you were right, kind of thing. I kind of see things before they happen, or I just have so many contacts. They removed all natural health, natural everything that's good for you. And they right. pushed a different narrative. I even got kicked off my Awakening YouTube, and everything that was mentioned was true.
Wow.
So when, because unfortunately, the way the AI is working at the moment, it's like a Google search. So it's based on what it's finding. So if it's finding all the bad stuff and not the good stuff, and unfortunately, if we look at humanity, because I know you study the brain, so this is really fascinating for me. Unfortunately, if you look at the majority, they don't know what's going on.
Right.
So if 80% say it's this, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the truth, because
right.
they've been manipulated by the media to think a certain way.
Yes.
So how do we actually break that pattern?
By the capital, right? Like it's what makes money is what gets pushed. So that's totally understandable. I mean, you can't, well, I guess you can with bottled water, but you can't like charge for like air or whatever. Like things that are free are usually just very healthy. So to solve that problem, it seems pretty difficult. And you know what the LLMs these days, they are being trained on human language, which is full of our biases and our economic incentives and our, you know, every kind of weird idea that we have and everything. So it's full of our groupthink, essentially. And that's what you're saying. Like, it's the groupthink that is wrong, right? I mean, that's 80% wrong. There's a nugget of truth, whatever. But basically, they commandeer the groupthink and they control the narrative. And as long as they control the narrative, whoever's in power in any domain, then they can control what people say. They can control what people say. They can control what people think. And spending money is a way of saying something. So they have all the control. Now, when you build a future oracle that is looking at the world in an automated fashion, and it's just saying, okay, what is true? Because the only way I know what truth is to be able to predict what actually happens. Like you said, you've got all these feelers out there in that domain. And so because of that, you're able to see the future before it happens. And that seems to be the point of intelligence, is to allow us to see something that's coming down the pipe before it actually gets to us. So you built this AI infrastructure that is only looking at the real raw data. It's not being trained on data sets we've curated, unlike these LLMs. It's not being trained on groupthink. It's being trained on the real world data, the raw data. And so it learns to predict the raw data. I think that is the solution, is that you have to get down to reality, and you can only do that by predicting time. You know, our language is human generated. We then We then modify the LLMs after we train them to be like, okay, well, you said a little hate speech here, so we're going to take that out or whatever. So we even change their speech after it's been trained. So we, you know, there's no way to get to truth bedrock when you're dealing with that kind of situation. You can get to consensus, maybe, you know, whatever we agree on, right? But we can't get to like what's real. The only way to get to what's real is to predict the actual future, the actual world that's going to occur. I think that's the best you can do.
And is the, like, will the training of this go back? Because what I find is I read about 100 books a year, and I find the older books are the ones that give the true information, that you kind of see patterns and everything. And a lot of them, that's when I kind of start looking for it, when they actually get banned or they're no longer available. Then I go, okay, there's something good in this that I need to find a way to actually get this. But I know that there's some sites and they have all books, they've been scanned or whatever, so you can actually get the PDF version for free, usually, for anything in the world. Is it able to tap into that? Because if it gets that kind of information, I think its level of intelligence is going to be incredible compared to if it's just searching what's on the web.
Yes, because it will be able to. Like right now, what we've building and what we'll launch soon is literally like the lowest layer infrastructure. But eventually, we'll be able to build on top of that, and we'll incorporate stuff like that. But at the lowest foundational layer, we're saying, okay, let's build a network. Every computer on the network is running an AI engine, and it automatically goes out and listens to data streams. So the fundamental data type that exists on this network is a data stream. It always assumes there's more data to be had that's going to come in. And that differentiates the data set from the data stream. So it goes out, it subscribes to some data stream, it's always listening to it. It starts to get a feel for how to predict this thing. What are the patterns in this thing? How do those patterns relate to other data streams and the patterns that are found in them? It makes correlations. It starts predicting that data stream. It broadcasts it out for free. That's kind of the basic like data flow of the entire system. Other AI bots, other neurons can subscribe to that data stream and use it to predict their own data streams. So they can kind of leverage the work of other Satori neurons. So I think with that foundation, we'll be able to build more and more intelligence on top of it. But right now we're launching with just kind of getting that out there. LLMs will come later. But yeah, we'll incorporate all that language stuff eventually.
And I suppose people don't know. I mean, everyone's familiar with Chat GPT, the Bing one. Is it Gemini? Is the, you see, they've got billions, probably trillions behind them. And they're creating it in their own way. Because I mean, they don't even answer me when I ask questions, because the things I ask, it's not expecting my questions. But yeah. You're kind of breaking the narrative because you're stepping outside of that. So, like, can their systems, because technically you're a competitor to them. I mean, I think the people, once they realize what you're doing, they'll be behind you, because there's so many people that even countries have stopped people being able to protest, stop people to talk. And it's gone nuts what's going on in the world. And just when you think it's bad, it gets worse. Like, in reality, what you're creating is like a freedom AI, but based on what everyone is in, instead of it being the narrative of the rich boys.
I hope so. Yeah. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to do it in a very particular way. Future first, kind of this raw data approach, because you can't do that with anything else. You can't do that with language. You can't do that with images. Can't just throw the raw data in. You have to curate the data, massage it, get it right, throw out outliers. But with the raw actual data that happens in the real world, you know, future prediction, you can do that. So yes, we're trying to become that. But starting with future, starting with time, essentially. And this is the only thing, like, I often think about the brain and how it relates to something like this. Because I think, okay, you've got a newborn baby. And so this brain is inside of the skull. It's got this nervous system that reaches out into the fingers and all the skin and the eyes. And so what happens as soon as it's born is all this data starts flowing in, right? Data that it didn't really have before, right? It's brand new. This is bizarre. And so all this data starts flowing in and the brain has to make sense of the data. And I see, like, that's kind of the situation that we're in right now on the planet. If we treat the whole human civilization as an infant, we have the nervous system with that's the internet. We have all these data streams passing data. You know, we measure things, we understand, you know, but we bring it in and then we don't bring it into a centralized thing where we predict the future of it all in context of all other things. We kind of just have the nervous system, and that's the internet. A bunch of data streams, they're used over here for this purpose, they're used over here for this purpose, but we don't bring them in. So the very foundational layer of intelligence, like we were saying earlier, the point of intelligence is to see the future before it happens. The very foundational layer, what's happening on like our subconscious experience, is that we're predicting the future all the time so that we can, you know, have our body in the position it needs to be at the time it needs to be so that we can make the movement that's appropriate at that moment. So we're always predicting the future to get the rest of ourself ready at that moment. And so that's all that the infant has. It has data coming in, and then all it has is to know that new data is going to come in and new data. And it says, if I can learn how to predict what's happening next, then I can know if I know the truth. I can know that I'm making a model of reality that actually has predictive power. So it's as good as true to me. Like, that's as good as I can get. So yeah, that's why we're starting with prediction. We'll layer everything else on top of that.
So with the brain, because I know you study that, how do you differentiate like intelligence, which would be kind of the brain memory, to the mind?
Differentiate intelligence from the mind. Oh, you know, I think one of the best researchers that I've ever come across as far as brain stuff goes is Jeff Hawkins. And so Jeff Hawkins researched the brain, and he researched the research. Like, there's so much research about the brain. And he said, okay, what is all this research telling us? Because it's all like we have in the world today, you know, siloed, it's disconnected. There's no overarching theory of the brain. So he said, well, it seems as though the neocortex, which is our human level of the brain, like, we have a larger neocortex than any other animal. So he says the neocortex is this sheet of neurons that evolved latest in us, and it's a repeating unit. It's a network of repeating units. A little circuit of a few neurons, like 50 neurons, in these little repeating units that all communicate with each other. So you've got the neurons that communicate with each other. They form these little units. Those communicate with each other. And those actually clump together and form something called cortical columns. Those kind of are in a specific region and they'll communicate. And that's why a specific region, you know, you'll be like, okay, this region seems to have something to do with auditory signals, because anytime we stimulate it artificially, the person reports being able to hear something or something like that. So our neocortex has all these regions, and that's a network in and of itself. So the pattern that he kind of came up with or was able to see is that our brain is a repeating circuitry, but it does that on multiple levels. They aggregate. And so at the very top level, at the very bottom level, it's a network of neurons. And at the very top level, it's a network of two units, our two hemispheres of the brain. We have a left and we have a right side, and they're connected in the center with the corpus callosum. Differentiating the mind from the brain, is that what you said? Or from intelligence? Was that
Yeah, intelligence, yeah.
Seems to me, there seems to be a feedback mechanism in this pattern, this hierarchical layering of networks. There seems to be a feedback mechanism, and that feedback mechanism is that they aggregate votes about what's going on as they go up the hierarchy. So, so as they go up the hierarchy, then when it gets to the top of the hierarchy, and that would be the corpus callosum in this analogy, it then starts to unfold those predictions back out into behaviors. And so in other words, what that means is that when we have an idea like I'm hungry, or, you know, I'm cold, I need to go put on a jacket or something, you know, when we have some kind of inkling that this is what's going to happen, that idea, or we could say that intention, we might feel it as an intention, that starts to get unfolded down this hierarchy and says, well, the lower levels say, well, in order for that to happen, I first need to lean forward in order to stand up. So I'm going to predict that we're going to lean forward. And as that starts to unfold in lower layers, finer and finer, you know, mechanical, or I should say muscle movements get issued all the way down to the bottom of the hierarchy. So that means control, or like free will, or like what's going to happen, is the same thing as prediction. That's my takeaway. So if you have this hierarchy and you put in a little command at the top and say, well, I think the world's going in this direction, and as long as the hierarchy believes that, then it begins to unfold and all the layers start to act as if it's true, which makes it true. You know, your body stands up, you move into the kitchen, you get some food to eat, whatever you want to do, right? So that's kind of how I differentiate the mind from intelligence. It seems like the mind is this mechanical thing. Intelligence, or I should say, like maybe our subjective experience, puts our intention onto that and says, well, I did that because I wanted to do it. But it was because of the prediction got unfolded all the way down the hierarchy. So if we're going to make a Satori network of prediction, we kind of have to make it as decentralized as possible so that not one particular Google entity or whatever can put in kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy at the top and have it unfold. Everybody believes it's going to happen, so they make it happen. It happens to increase their power and control. You know, we don't want that. So we need to decentralize it as fast as possible.
Okay. A lot of people, you know, they'll say, oh, I got to download, you know, this is from the cosmos and all this. My own personal opinion is that we're learning from day one. I read a load of books. You're learning from everybody. You're looking at programs, you're looking at everything. And I think it's like binary squared in your head. It's just processing. And that's where you're getting the information. And it eventually comes down when you kind of look for it. It's like you're kind of putting it out there. And like, what's your thoughts on that? Do you believe in that, you know, we're channeling it down, or is it just a supercomputer that we've got in between our ears?
Oh, that comes to the question of determinism, you know, because we say, well, if it's just a computer, then we're all just computers, and, you know, it's kind of like, what's the point? Okay, fine. The way I see it is that, yes, even if it's just a computer in the head, even if that's the truth, that computer has inputs that we can't explain, because we live in a world where, you know, like the uncertainty principle is true. You cannot be certain of everything. So down at the quantum level, even, events are occurring that are unpredictable And
Just
those
like the guy
events.
is cutting the grass next door, so I'm going to mute myself as you're talking because
Oh,
that's an unpredictable event.
I didn't hear anything, but that's fine. So, yes, because if we have a deterministic system and we say, okay, what makes this a deterministic system is that what came before determines what is happening now. That's determinism, right? So we have this chain of causation into the past. Well, if you have an infinite past, or if you cannot follow it back to its origin, then you don't know how it's going to unfold. If there's no initial condition, and if there's an infinite past, there is no initial condition. If there's an infinite size, there is no initial condition because things flow up from the quantum. So in that way, it kind of does feel like there's this space for I don't know what to call that, whether it's some kind of spiritualism or magic, or there's a space for the unknown to kind of decide what's going to happen, and we don't know what it's going to be. So I do see the brain as a deterministic structure, but its inputs and its nuance, they seem to come from somewhere that I can't explain. So I don't know.
So with the name, is it from Satoshi or what? Where did the name come from?
So I'm very interested in metaphysics and ontology and stuff like that. And so I looked at Eastern kind of culture and religions, Hinduism and Buddhism and stuff like that, and just kind of see like what is their metaphysics. And in searching through all that kind of stuff, I found this word Satori. And Satori means enlightenment, and that's why the logo is kind of this, Hindu, like Buddhist, meditating and I don't know, achieving some enlightenment or something. So I thought it was appropriate because when I look out for several reasons, but when I look out at the landscape of AI, I see everybody kind of building for spatial data. And by that, I mean non-temporal data. I mean, there's a few little things for temporal data, but it's kind of like a side gig. People are like, okay, that's just whatever. I think that's the main thing. That's what's up. And so if we're going to achieve AGI, we're going to have temporal data first. Like we need to be building on data streams, not just a data set, right? And so to make that differentiation, there's two kinds of patterns in data. There's spatial patterns and there's temporal patterns. And so if you have an image and you say, I want to see if there's a dog in this image, then that is a spatial pattern. You're just looking at an image as a static thing. There is no real time component. Now, if dogs are evolving at like an exponential rate, and you have to kind of keep up with that, and the image could be from any time or whatever, then you have a temporal component. You're saying, I need to understand this pattern over time. How does it change through time? And so that's kind of I don't see any AI stuff doing that. Like even large language models, what are they? They're a static data set that was been trained, and it took 3 months to train it or 6 months. And so now if our language was evolving every 2 months and we had to retrain it, and then we would start doing things with time, and we would say, well, we need to anticipate how this system is evolving, and we will model that. So that's Satori is meant to model the temporal first, to model how things are evolving, because it's watching the real world and everything in the real world is evolving, together. Some things are very intimately correlated and others are not really. So it has to watch and see how things are evolving in the real world. I think for that reason, I called it Satori because I felt like it represented kind of the next level. It's not that complex, the AI engine. We're gonna build. It's complexity, but the philosophy of it is, I don't see that happening anywhere else. So, yeah.
So, like, I suppose it's kind of connecting with my awakening show as well, and I think I'll put this episode out on that as well because I think it's really relevant. If we look at some of the craziness that's going on, and just say what they spray, and if you do the research, you realize there's patents for this, the bad boys are behind it. There's even countries when you do the freedom of information, like the UK, they're saying, oh, we're blocking out the sun. And most people don't even know that. And then there's, but where I want to kind of go a step further is because, like, for example, I'm trying to make change, but I've learned that when you stick your head about the parapet, they can slap you into the head. And if there's 100 people, it's grand, but most people are afraid to do that. But there
Yeah.
has been people around the world for every single different thing that's going on that have done these things, and they have ways. So if we look at just say what they're spraying, if we're looking at for kind of making a better humanity, can this be used for finding out how they made change in a little town or a city that can be replicated around the world, which is what's going to change the world?
Yes. So with the Satori neuron, you can have it predict any data. So you download it and it starts, it goes out to the network, says, what should I predict? And it'll get some predictions or some data streams to start predicting. That's fine. Like it's meant to work in an automated fashion, but if you're an individual who wants to, dive in, you can actually point data to it and say, no, I want you to predict this particular data. And so if, on that means it can support like a local level kind of thing. So I don't know, if you're a municipality or something and you want it to predict data streams, local to you, it can do that. And you can build a kind of any kind of size of network that's focused on that kind of stuff. So yes, I anticipate that it can. As far as like the Satori Association or like kind of the big level picture, that's kind of what I'm focused on and trying to get the broad network to look at the data that describes the world in the best way, So like look at the CPI, like I mentioned earlier, if we're gonna want to know our civilization, like what's happening in our economy. What's happening in people's attention, where people's attention, that's kind of really important. What's happening in our environment? We want to know like how everything related to humans is evolving. And, governments, demographics, everything, technology. So we need to find those data streams that have the most prescient data, correlate them, and get kind of this broad view of what the future holds for us. Because if we can predict one of those, then it helps us be able to predict, something else that's related. So once we start doing this at scale and we can predict everything pretty well, then it gives us the ability to predict everything else pretty well. So yes, on the global scale, I'm trying to get to that, but on the local scale, people can make their own networks of any size that are predicting anything that they care about. And for free, I mean, you just download, it's just a tool. You just download the Satori neuron and it's, whatever you want to do, you can do with it. And I think, but on the global scale, I think we need that because we're entering into, or we're already in an environment where our environment is technology now and it's exponentially evolving, right? I mean, it's at a rate of exponential power. So I like, how do we, as a human, how do we anticipate the future so that we can kind of coordinate our efforts? Our communication with each other is slow. How do we come into consensus about like very dangerous things that are coming and see them before they, all see them? We all have to agree before we can take behavior to change our society. So that's kind of my goal, is to make this future oracle that can give us a warning of big things, but also on the local scale.
But it's still kind of coming back to like everyone's putting in their information. So in reality, it's not going to go towards the truth unless you can give it information that's concrete. Like I could give concrete information to show that if you got that, how dangerous it is and everything based on the research and being able to prove it. Whereas 99% of people will say, no, this is good for you. And because has it got, like, will it be able to determine truth versus?
That I think so. So this first layer we're building is just focused on raw data, right? And so what's it going to do? It's going to be able to predict raw data, you know? I mean, but as we have that layer, once we've scaled to that, we can then incorporate other data such as these LLMs or, you know, anything else, any other kind of data that's not temporally connected. That's spatial data, you know, data out of books, out of any information like that. So we'll be able to incorporate that later. And that will give us our ability to associate that information with what it knows about the real world, right? We can then associate them together and we'll be able to speak to it because it'll have a layer of an LLM. So we'll be able to literally just have a conversation. We'll say, well, you know, tell me about the future of this, or you know, I assume this is going to happen. So let's take that as an assumption. And how does that affect this other thing over here? We'll be able to just basically talk to the future and ask what's real.
Because I mean, even with all the stuff that I know, and I see it with a lot of people, there are so much things out there now that it is very hard to determine what's real and what's not. And
Yes.
sometimes I call them the bad boys, they throw out things and ban it intentionally to make some of the, let's call them freedom fighters, to grab onto it, assuming it's right, and they're just doing it to catch you out. You know, so there's a lot
Right.
of trickery in the world as well.
Yeah. And so AI is going to be able to suss that out and be able to say, okay, I'm smarter than any human. So, and that's kind of what we want, is we want an artificial intelligence that is smarter than all of us combined, that can tell us what the future is going to be before it happens. And in order to do that, we have to tie it at the bottom layer to reality. We can't tie it to opinion. We can't tie it to economic incentive. We can't tie it to groupthink or propaganda. None of that. It has to see the real world. So, that token that I mentioned at the beginning, if you get a token, you now have the right, and I would say the responsibility, honestly, to put it towards good use, not as far as spending, but as far as voting, putting it towards good use as far as voting, saying, okay, I'm going to lay it down here. And put it on the vote for this data stream because I know it's valuable data. It's real data. It's not manipulated. This is the real data right here. So, and furthermore, not only is it, you know, not manipulated, it's real data, but it's good data. You know, it's not some random pointless information. It's good data that's useful. People want to know the future of this data for real. So if we can disseminate the control of which data streams are looked at, basically, where does this network's attention go? That's the point of putting it on a crypto so that everybody can have a vote, everybody can have a say in where it goes.
And because it's decentralized, it doesn't mean that you need then massive storage data centers and billions
Right.
behind you to like what the likes of Facebook and all these other people are doing.
That's right. It's decentralized. So we're decentralizing the production of the AI, right? I mean, it comes with an engine, so you don't have to be a data modeler. You just download it and run it. So we're decentralizing the production. We're decentralizing the benefit, right? You earn this token. But I think most importantly, we're decentralizing the control. So those three things, and yes, like you said, so since we're decentralizing the production, it can run on any computers worldwide. We don't, and furthermore, I think this is one thing, this is one reason I call it Satori as well. There are, you know, there's another cool system called BitTensor. And it has a future predicting kind of infrastructure. So it has something like this. But there's a big difference in the way, kind of the underlying philosophy of Satori and everything else, including BitTensor. And that is that we don't share weights across the network, right? That's costly. It's inefficient. It has this really high overhead. But BitTensor does that, and it allows it to build large models without having these, huge data centers, right? So you can build, that's the point of BitTensor, is you can build a large model on a network. You have to pay the extra cost of, transferring the weights and everything, but you can still do it, which is pretty cool, right? Which works really well for spatial data, like I mentioned earlier. You want to be able to build big models for spatial data because you need the nuance. But for temporal data, since everything is correlated in time, you actually don't need to build this huge distributed model. What you can do instead is build small models or models of any size, but build them locally and then share not the weights of the model, not the inner workings, but the actual outputs of the model, the actual prediction, because that prediction has information that other models can use to help train themselves. So, I think it's a more appropriate efficiency. It's a more appropriate matching than just building a large model because you don't have to pay for the overhead of sharing weights. You just broadcast your predictions out, and that in real time helps other models change their own model, right? Because they're subscribed to you, they're using you as input to predict this other thing. So it helps them. So what we're building is actually a federation of models. And you can only really do this efficiently, I think, if you're focused on time. And that was kind of the aha moment for me, actually. So I don't remember how we got on that topic.
There's one of the guys that I follow on TikTok, and he's even getting kind of so many strikes. I mean, I got a lot of strikes as well, so I have to kind of be careful. But he had done a picture in a supermarket showing all the cosmetics that you can use. And
I've seen this, I think.
it's like 95% or more is owned by Vanguard, owned by BlackRock, Fidelity, and all that. So then he done another analysis. It's like, who owns what? Because I knew that Pepsi and Coke are owned by the same people. It's all the shares. And it's like a tiny percentage is the population that owns this little thing. Then there's a tiny little percentage that's the shareholders, as in like the, Larry Fink's and all these kind of people, employees, let's call them. And they're all just buying shares in the different thing, which in turn, they're controlling the whole world and they're owning all the military stuff and everything. It's a danger. It's so dangerous that that amount of control is allowed. And what kind of frustrates me is the competition authority comes in and stops the small boy that's trying to big get big, but yet they allow all this kind of stuff to go on. So there's a massive monopoly. And I think there'll be more with what you're doing as well, because most people that would go straight over their head. Like they don't even realize that how dangerous that is. But I think but what you're doing, that's actually going to kind of expose that more. But on the opposite side now as well, I want to ask this thing, because I think the way you're doing this not going to happen. But with the property, BlackRock, I know BlackRock and a lot of them, they came in, it was the land grab with the 2008, and they're still doing it. They're just taking all the property. They don't care because they have a printing press and they can just keep getting it. And that's why
That's
you know
right.
you have 40-year-olds, they can't even buy a house, they're living with their parents. And there's just so much depression going on, and so many people seeing therapists and everything. These guys have unlimited resources. They see your thing coming along, they come along and they offer you a billion gazillion dollars. But the reality is, the way that you're creating it, they won't be able to control it. Am I correct in thinking that?
Not unless they buy every Satori token. Right. And if you have in any distributed system, if you gain a certain percentage of the population, right, then you can control the system. So We've put this token on a open, decentralized blockchain, so that you can track it. You can see it. You can see, okay, well, this much is owned by this address and this address. We know who these big players are. It looks like BlackRock doesn't own this whole thing. So that is, I think, very important to be able to audit who owns the token and who has the control. This allows you to audit that. Like, you know who has control, direct control over the future. And as long as we keep it as distributed as possible, I think that's the best situation we can hope for. Yeah.
Like, because I saw you have a brilliant video that's kind of given the vision. It's only like 6 minutes, but it's like the three phases.
Yeah.
So you might just kind of touch on them, and then because sometimes people are going, how many tokens? Because they think of kind of Bitcoin and they go 22 million and all this
Right.
kind of stuff. So you might just kind of go through the phases, but also how many tokens are what way it's kind of controlled for those that wouldn't even know about tokens.
So when it comes to currency, I studied economics back in the day because I was really curious about how this thing works. And, scarcity is important. So we built a system where the tokens come out very kind of slowly compared to something like Bitcoin. Kind of at a linear scale and then kind of tops off. And so how many tokens, it means that there will be like, well, this is the plan right now. The token is owned by the community. So these kind of decisions are owned by the community. They can change for that reason. But the way we've designed it is that there will be about 5 million tokens for the next 20 years. Like, it'll come out slowly, but you go down 20 years from now, there's like 5 million tokens. And at that point, it will still increase at like 2% a year. And that's it. So that's the design as of right now. And so we've built this for the long term. We're trying to build this for, perpetuity, forever. So that means we have this long three-phase roadmap, as you mentioned. And so the first phase, well, pre-first phase is right now. We're developing it. We haven't launched yet. We're in beta. So that's, phase zero. Phase one is we launch and we try to scale the network as much as possible because the bigger the network, the more things we can watch, the more models we can create, the more accurate our predictions will become, the more, so we scale to a point where we can predict large scale things. The kind of data streams that everybody cares about. We can predict those pretty well. Like, that's the goal of phase one. We scale to that level. Phase two is we add on these other elements, and one of those elements being probably the most important element being the market, a privatized market for prediction. So in phase one, we're building something called the public good. It's free and open, and it's public good, right? This is the
Just
truth
for
about.
those that will be listening, it'd be like Facebook grabbing all the information, but then that there's stuff that can be bought which actually monetizes it to give you some return for all the effort and the programming and the whole lot to come back. Yeah, would that be?
That's pretty good. So, like, think of it this way. As we're building this public good, we're improving the models. And so anybody who's running one of these Satori neurons, the model is being created on their machine and it lives on their machine. And so they own the model. We don't take it up to some central server. We don't snatch it. It's theirs. If they turn off their computer and be like, I'm done with this system, it's gone, right? We have to have somebody else build a model like that, right? So, all these computers, while we're scaling, they're developing expertise in some kind of domain, some kind of temporal, combination of data out there. They're watching it and they're developing expertise in that. And they're building that into a model that lives on the machine. Well, once phase two starts, we say, okay, if you have a model that's related to this, we're opening up a marketplace so that, let's say there's a company that wants to know the future of their sales or something, And you say, hey, I've been building this model that knows all about your industry. You know, I know about this and that. And okay, so I can help you with knowing your sales. In other words, I can be the point of entry into this huge world model ecosystem that says I can de-silo your data and make it so that I can build, I can grab all the insights from de-siloing your data, bundle it up as a prediction. And instead of broadcasting that out to everybody, you pay a fee and I'll give you the prediction in private. So the second layer is this marketplace of prediction, because there's always need for public prediction. That's what we're building first, the public good. What we're building second is saying, well, you know, what if I have a data stream that I want predicted, but I don't want anybody else to know the prediction? Like, it's just for me, because it's my sales, it's my business, it's my, you know, it's maybe my blood pressure, you know, it's my biometric data. I don't want everybody knowing my biometric or my spending habits. This is private data. So we can de-silo that information and give them a prediction without broadcasting it to the rest of the world. So that's phase two. Phase three is we say, okay, during phase one and phase two, we've been able to decentralize this further and further. In fact, the marketplace even decentralizes it further. So we've been able to decentralize this further and further. Phase three is saying, there's really nothing else for us to do after that, except continue to make sure that the network is as decentralized as possible, right? Make it a fully autonomous DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization. So that's phase three. And that phase is meant to just last forever, right? That's the point of the Satori Association, is just to have it last forever, that we are always trying to decentralize this thing. So, because everything has a tendency to centralize, the power has a tendency to centralize. So you need an entity that's trying to, that has that as its mandate forever. So that's the goal.
And I mean, like, I totally understand the business model, because obviously with the amount of programming, all the stuff that's being created and everything, there has to be a return on investment and time and the whole lot. But when, kind of going back to the earlier question, when people realize this is a gold mine here, which we don't really have, and is it something that you or the team is like not being able to be bought? Because I know the system is kind of still doing it, but if I'm Mr. Bad Boy and I come in and I go, here's your check, and then I'm using everything and using it in the opposite based on the information that I've got, I can make it the way I want, because they want suffering. They want just, I mean, people don't realize how bad things are, but when you go down the rabbit hole, it's a million times worse, but it can change like that. I believe we can make the world beautiful so fast.
Right.
So
yeah, governments and corporations, they're capital machines, right? That's what they are. And, you know, these big human decision makers, they're captured by those machines. You know, like, I don't see Elon Musk as really human. I see him as an economic machine. He's there to make money. So here's the thing. I've been building Satori for 2 years on my own, right? And so now I've got a small little team, and you know, very few people. The community is small. We're tiny, right? Like, nobody knows about us. I have been building it for this reason, so that the world can have a decentralized AI that the world can control, that the humans can control. When I look at the world, I see, okay, there's machinery and then there's people, right? There's technology, there's economic technology. That's the machines I've kind of mentioned. But then there's people, and the people are the heart of the world, right? We're the long-suffering citizenry that gets abused by its, you know, so we're the heart. And giving the heart a little more say in what happens, like, I think that's really important. So power to the people is kind of my attitude. And I know, I've come to terms with my mortality, I think is something that's pretty important. So let's say I take a bunch of money and I, have fun for 20, 40 years or, whatever, and then I die. That's not a meaningful story to me. It doesn't, whatever, right? Like that's no good. So I, asking if I can be bought, I don't think so. Right? I don't think so because I built this with a religious fever for free, and essentially someday I'll have to like earn some money so I can do this full time. Like I don't even do this full time right now. I think after launch that might be a possibility. But I've built this entire thing as a gift. So I feel like that's a silly thing to say because it sounds like I'm just tooting my own horn or whatever. But you asked the question. Like,
No,
can I
but
be
I
bought?
think
I don't think
what you're
so.
doing is, and I see it with even some of the podcasters as well, because they kind of, they're giving free content as such, and they're just asking for donations. And now, like, you've got your kind of wallets and whatever. There are some people that are wealthy that are fighting this that will go, I love what you're doing. And they will give donations. And as it's growing, then, like, you can have a decent lifestyle. No, like, I don't think you need to have three jets and 50 homes and
Right.
stuff like that. And I think the community will actually appreciate
Yes.
what you're doing. And like, there's so many angles that we like. To be honest with you, like, I think we, because like we're close to the hour. I want to get you back once you're getting to the next phases and everything. Because I love what you're doing, and I think. I hope people actually realize how important it is, because I mean, I'm kind of gone down the sovereignty route, say common law, that
Ah,
kind of
yes.
thing. And I
Cool.
think that information as well, because I've realized the power. I mean, I've been in over 100 court cases, and I'm through my knowledge of reading 20 books and just kind of learning and playing with things. I say, ooh, I can do this. If everybody had that information, it would change so much. But I can't just go put it out there. Because they'll just say, hey, let's attack this guy, and that won't happen anymore. But when there's so many more people, and then they get the kind of, let's say, a certain letter that will work, it's so fast we can change. People have think we've got doom and gloom, and it's not going to change. And I think, to be honest, what you're doing is giving me so much hope, because it's something that I think we need. So, Jordan, like, what's the best way that people can actually get in contact with you?
So worry about Satori. Like I go on these just to talk about Satori. And so I don't even engage in social media very much or whatever, but you can go to satorinet.io. On the join tab, there's like a bunch of like socials and stuff like that. So you can go there and we put out updates on Twitter and we have our community in Discord. I mean, that's basically the two places we exist. So that's probably the best place. If you go to Discord, you can always contact me. Like I'm on Discord all the time. I'm programming and whatever. So for me, that's probably the best place to contact me. But if you just want to follow Satori, you can do it on Twitter and you'll know when we have major updates through Twitter or through the Discord. Or also on the website, like on the homepage, you can put in your email. I just want an email when you guys launch. And we'll do that. So that's kind of the three things you could do to follow this.
And make sure I put all the links, as well as the link to the video that shows
All
the
right.
kind of 6 minute, because I think it's brilliant. But I definitely want to get you back, and you know, as it's progressing, because I think this is something that people, once they realize what you're doing, they'll it's hope for humanity. That's the way I see it. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
That's all for the crypto podcast, and I'll say the awakening and speaking as well, because to be honest, I think this is a is very relevant in the world. It's going to affect every single person. So if you understood what we're talking about, it's you'll be happy. And be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share, and even comment, no matter what. Just once, not abusive. Even if there's things you didn't agree with, just write it. We read everything and share with your friends. So until next week, take care.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.